Spartans to Podcast Evolved, your home for Halo. I'm your host, Oren, and with me today is David.
Hello, everybody.
What's up, David? It's just you and me this week. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I have finished the game as of Friday. It is now Sunday. I'm very excited. I haven't absorbed everything yet, but I can say I'm pretty positive on the game. Pretty damn positive.
Pretty damn positive. Awesome. Well, I will get into my second playthrough a little bit deeper into this episode. And yes, I echo the very positive sentiments. So, welcome everybody. This week's topic will continue our current and ongoing lore series, Infinite Impressions, with episode 4, Campaign Spoiler Casts, part 1. So I will just say it now. If you have not played until the end of the Pelican Down mission, you should stop listening to this episode. We're going to talk about the prologue, the intro, and then the first 8 missions, which we'll talk about, which goes all the way through the end of Pelican Down. I don't really want to say any more context around that. You'll know what that mission is and what you need to do to finish that mission when you get to it. If you don't mind spoilers and you haven't played those, then feel free to continue to listen. But we'll talk about, like I said, the prologue, those 8 missions. We'll touch a little bit on side objectives, you know, there's because some of that ties into the story. But generally, a lot of things like audio logs and lore bases and things like that we'll cover in another episode. This is just going to focus on the actual events of each mission, where we are in the story, where the characters are with themselves, as well as our impressions of just like the level design a little bit. Do we find it fun to play and kind of the basic things of that? Like we said in some of our other inaugural Infinite Impressions episodes, we will be dissecting every part of this game with each one of these episodes. So if you want more details or more input or more thoughts from us on an aspect that we may cover in more detail, let us know, and we'll dedicate, you know, a whole episode or tie it to another episode for all that. That's kind of the plan for this new series that we're launching. But before we get started, let's do some housekeeping. If you're new to the show, welcome. Podcast Evolve hosts a variety of shows, this one being our main show doing Infinite Impressions. But be sure to also listen to The Road to Infinite and our Character Dossier series. You can find those on our podcast feeds, you could find those on our website or on our YouTube channel. Our other shows include Mission Debrief, Builds with Blocks, Halo Book Club, and Halo Headlines. We also have a partnership with HCS Pro Talk with Will and Josh, where they discuss the latest information within the competitive Halo scene with an emphasis on community every single week. As of recording, Sunday the 19th, the HCS event Raleigh is going on right now, and so they're there at the event. They're doing the finals and all that kind of hype right now. So check out their next episode as they talk about the overall, like what happened during Raleigh, any impressions, you know, drama, recap, all that kind of stuff on their next episode, which I believe will be 214. So you can check that one out. We'd like to take this moment to thank all of our patrons for their continued support. Thank you guys so, so much.
Thanks, guys.
We have had a lot of patrons join us over the last month or two, so thank you all, and welcome if you are new. Like I said, every little bit helps, and we're happy to give you guys those rewards for supporting us, and we hope you guys stick around and enjoy the show and help us continue to make more and more content for you guys. Our patrons receive a variety of exclusive rewards, such as early episodes, unique swag, and even access to our new soundtrack that features 18 different songs. Head over to patreon.com, Podcast Evolve, to learn more. Also, you can rate us and leave us a review on our podcast service. We greatly appreciate your guys' feedback and praise and all this kind of stuff just to make our show higher quality. And finally, we encourage our listeners to support Audible, where they can enjoy the growing collection of Halo novels all in one place, along with thousands of other novels, guidance, wellness programs, and more. You can use the URL audibletrial.com/podcastevolve to learn more and start your free trial today. All right, David, so we've always had this segment on this show called Last Week in Halo, but we're kind of rebranding this now that Halo Infinite is out, and we're going to talk about what was your last week on Zeta Halo specific. So what is something that you did in the Halo Infinite campaign that you want to share with everybody?
I can say I finished it, so that was pretty cool. I did all the collectibles. I have one more skull to get.
So have you 100%ed it then?
When I get this last skull, I will have 100%ed it.
Congratulations.
It's kind of like, because there's missable stuff, because you can't replay the campaign missions, I had to start a new game. So I started a new game today, or was it today? Yeah.
This morning?
Yeah, this morning. Just because I wanted to get the last collectibles and the last, sorry, skulls, and get the 8-hour achievement. Because what I want to do next is actually start Legendary, but realistically, I'm highly doubt I'm going to finish Legendary in 8 hours.
Probably not.
Yeah, I didn't want that in the back of my brain as well, so I'm like, okay, I'll knock that achievement out. And I've picked up a couple of random straggler stuff I didn't know, I didn't have, you know, I haven't actually looked at the list yet, so like, I'm just assuming. So like, you're doing like random things. One thing I did that was pretty damn cool, so I was in a wasp, bouncing around the map, kind of looking for all these kind of audio files, and I'm just pinging, scanning constantly, and then I get attacked by two banshees, and I'm like, two banshees and one wasp is a pretty bad matchup, and I'm playing, this is like my normal difficulty game, so like, the wasps don't last very long with these two ships that are just constantly bombarding you. I managed to kill one, and then my wasp was on fire, it was burning, I was like, oh man, this thing is gonna go. And the last banshee came in, shot it, my ship started to explode, I jumped out and grappled last minute onto the banshee that killed me and hijacked it, and that was a pretty cool feeling. So that was a cool little moment. And I literally thought of the kind of little video they put out before the game of like a dude jumping out of one, rocketing another one, and grapple stealing the other. Like,
grabs us into another one. Yeah, I think I remember that from some of the marketing videos they had.
Yeah, I always thought they were like direct references to like, that's like a famous thing in like Battlefield, you know, jumping out of your plane and killing another plane and jumping back into it again. So I like that Halo has their version of that. Like, it's super simple to do. Like, it's not crazy difficult, especially when you have a maxed out grapple. And like, I spent this game grappling everywhere, so like, I feel pretty confident with the grapple. So once I knew I was going to try and do it, I felt like I could. And it was pretty cool to even just see it executed.
So my first playthrough was on Heroic. And to my surprise, I managed to finish the campaign in under 8 hours. I was not even keeping track of that. I kind of just beelined the golden path, as they say, to get the story. And so I was like, all right, well, now that I did the Heroic playthrough, time to do the Legendary one. So I'm going back doing my Legendary playthrough.
How are you finding it?
I think it's on the easier side of past Legendary difficulties. Like, I would still hold as, like, Halo 2 is, like, the hardest Legendary campaign. But this sits a little bit more closely with like a Halo 4 in terms of difficulty. I feel like Halo 4 was kind of the easiest legendaries in my opinion. But I think this is even easier. I think this is the easiest legendary. And I feel like that might just be because of the nature of the open world and like...
How much is skippable?
Yeah, well, it's not so much that it's skippable, but just like the encounters just feel... Like the enemies are definitely harder, but they don't feel super beefy, and they still hit hard. But like, I feel like part of what makes some of the past games more challenging on Legendary difficulty is that you're locked into the linear mission or the environment, like that arena. And you get that a little bit in some of the missions, but like when I'm zipping around and like just doing a random fob or a high value target, like I can approach it however I want. And so I think that helps mitigate the kind of difficulty scaling a little bit and allows me to just kind of approach it in a different way and react if I'm struggling a certain way. Now, that being said, the boss fights are still like excruciating sometimes. Like when we get to Pelican Down and we talk about the brothers, like, oh man, that one That was hard on Legendary. But I figured out a way. I think it's a pretty good method, and I'll share it with everybody if you're also having difficulty around that part.
Pretty good progress, so if you've got the Pelican down on Legendary already.
Yeah, and that was my goal. I was like, I'm gonna replay Legendary. I'm going to do some of... So that was my little tip thing, is that like I'm having fun just kind of like collecting stuff and like going and getting and capturing fobs and going and doing base assaults, because like I kind of missed a lot of that. Well, not missed, but I just avoided.
Yeah,
I avoided
so
some of that,
like,
on the first playthrough.
That's such a... For me, like, that's such a core of what makes this campaign so good, is like going and doing all those things. So, like, I just feel like the golden path is just not the best way to play this campaign. Do you know, it just seems weird.
Yeah.
That, like playing it as a standard Halo game would feel... It feels weird. Like, I'm doing it now. I'm on easy. I'm like, I'm running through it. I'm like, this is so weird. Like, I'm just zipping through this map. Like, you miss so much when you're not looking for the collectibles, when you're not taking out the fobs.
So, so it's weird. So, it's like, I'm enjoying playing all the extra stuff. So, It's nice, and so I'm enjoying that. So I'm kind of just... So that's kind of what I did. I don't really have a overly interesting story like your Hijack.
That's so funny, because then, like, our Legendary campaigns are going to be so different, because I won't be doing any of that. I'll be golden pathing my Legendary run, and you're going to be exploring and, like, doing all the kind of extra missions. That's so weird, yeah.
And I think what I'm going to do is that... I mean, it's because some stuff's missable, I'm not going to be able to 100%. But I think I'm going to use my Legendary playthrough, because I'm having such a fun time with it, and because I think it's a little easier than other Legendary runs, that I will use that as like my collectible hunting ones.
Yeah, but what I'll say is that there's literally very, very few missable tanks. Like, let's say there's maybe 50 collectibles. I think maybe 6 or 7 of them are missable in the whole campaign. And they're just on like the stuff in the first two missions. And then there's like 2 missions near the end of the game where, like, you know, when you... The game doesn't tell you when you're about to leave the open world for the last time, which is a little bit annoying.
Is it after the tank part?
I think so, yeah. Do you know when the mission kind of... The game kind of...
To not really give too much spoilers, because that's beyond what we're going to talk about. But kind of that area with the tank, I feel like, is what I think would be the last sort of open world section. Before then once you reach that part, it's kind of the point of no return until you beat the game, and then you're able to go back and do things that you... Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, that's something that I knew that we were always going to be looking forward to whenever they announced that Halo Infinite was going to be open world, is that how all of us hosts are just going to have a different experience, and the listeners are going to have their own different experience. So it's awesome to kind of hear that from everybody and kind of share our own experiences with this awesome game. So, well, let's go ahead and start diving in. Before we tackle this week's Infinite Impressions, last week was, of course, the launch of the game, and the entire Evolved family shared their initial impressions on Halo Infinite. So we had actually our first three, as like a three-part episode, if you will, if you missed it. We had Chris, the Tom, and Matt record their impressions on what we call Red Team. We had Colin, Will, and Aaron record their impressions on episode 2 for Blue Team. And then David and I joined Josh with HCS Pro Talk. And we did the Gray Team, episode 3. So if you haven't listened to our just overall impressions, we talk a little bit about the first 4 missions. We kind of try to keep it a little bit open to just kind of our initial thoughts about the game as a whole, or rather the campaign as a whole. So definitely check those out if you haven't listened to them. It was super awesome to be able to pull that together with all 9 of us to kind of doing our own little thing. So I'm very happy and pleased that the team was able to do all that. This week, campaign spoiler cast part 1. So here we go. This is the point of no return. We're going to talk about the prologue, the intro, and then the first 8 missions until the ending of Pelican Down.
You mean the lack of prologue, right, Oren? Hey-o.
Hey-o. Well, the prologue, let's just start there. Because the way I see you just mean the how the game just starts?
Yeah, I've already kind of like said this on our Gray Team episode. But like, yeah, like where the fuck is the intro of this game? It literally just throws you in with a very cool cutscene. But like, takes place very late in the story, I feel. that, like, there's so much more. You just don't, and you still don't know. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, the prologue is a pretty cool-ass animation that immediately sets up Aatrox as being the guy that just kicks your ass. Like, the Infinity's fucked. It's gone. And it's just in bits. It's ridiculous.
Well, so, like, the intro, you see the ring, and then it pans over to the Infinity, and then instantly gets, like, spearheaded with that warship. And it reminded me of the intro cinematic from Spartan Ops, where the Infinity, like, completely obliterates a Covenant ship. I can't remember what ship that it was. But I liked that duality and that kind of, like, role reversal, if you will, to where, like, oh, shit, we really liked that moment, but now it's happening to us.
And we don't like it.
And we don't like it. So, yeah, like you said, the prologue just really starts. And, like, it kind of is expected. Like when it started, I was like, yeah, okay. So the Infinity's being attacked by the Banished. We're seeing Chief fight the different grunts and jackals. You know, we'll get to learn a little bit of what's going on. But before really continuing, there's so much story that happens, like, before this moment.
Yeah.
I feel like we kind of are able to surmise, but we don't have. And I think that's kind of my biggest complaint with this campaign, I think, is not so much of what was told, but just, like, what wasn't.
Everything that's missing. Yeah. So I'm the same.
That's kind of where I sit. And we'll kind of get into it, I think, a little bit later in our part two, when we talk about the second half of the campaign, where they kind of fill in some of those gaps. But this story starts a little too late based off of where we are in the Halo present, if you will.
Yeah, I definitely would have appreciated more of a link between Halo 5, where Halo 5 ended, and where this picks up. Now, I know there's been, like, a couple of books that take place in between, and then there's, like we get the end of Shadow of Reach, like, the mission on Shadow of Reach directly fits in to what you're actually doing in this game, like, the start, like, the premise of it. So, like, and the mission that gets kind of revealed of what you were doing at Zeta Halo, that's kind of important. And, like, that's not really touched upon at all. It is in, like, some of the memories and some of the kind of the dialogue stuff that you can unlock. And then there's, what's the other book where the Banished come back? Was that the end of Shadow of Reach?
Well, the end of the Shadows of Reach is when the Banished come back from...
Yes.
Shadows of Reach is, it's not really a prologue or a prequel to Infinite, but I would say it's the closest link, which strangely isn't Halo 5. You would think that Halo 5 would be the closer link, but you actually get more context if you read that novel instead of playing Halo 5.
Very much so, because, like, at the end of Halo 5, you have everybody kind of set up. You have, you're at, I think they're in Sunai, and I can't remember, but, like, Infinity's on the run. The Guardians are everywhere. You're just legged away from Earth. You're teamed up with Halsey. You have Osiris. You have Blue Team. You have the Swords of San Helios on your side. And then, like, all of those characters are gone. They're not in this game. And it's just like, what the hell happened between then? You have Shadow of Reach, where you went on a mission to get a thing. And then you have where this game takes place. And it just immediately starts, tells you nothing. And I was like, holy crap. But, like, when I started, I was like, I thought I had I done something wrong. Like, where did I push a button? Did I skip something? Holy shit. And then once it picks up with the pilot and you're like, okay, we've seen all of this because they revealed all of this before. I didn't think that was literally the entire intro of the game that they had revealed, other than the brief little cutscene.
So to kind of finish the cutscene, after we see Chief in the hangar or in one of the hangars of the Infinity shooting jackals and grunts and stuff, The last character I expected to just appears, and it's Aatrox, and he just shows up and just, like, whacks Chief, and they have this pretty awesome fight. Chief's trying to get some punches in. Aatrox has his little mini grav hammer and is, like, knocking him around, and it eventually culminates to Chief just, like, struggling on the ground. Aatrox grabs him by, I think, his ankle and, like, tosses him or, like, drags him through the hangar as if he was, like, a box you're getting or, like, garbage you're trying to throw out. And then he grabs him by the neck, holds him out of the hangar, and he says, like, my name is Aatrox, and I'm the last face you'll ever see, and then drops him into space. And you get a pretty cool, like, POV shot of Chief looking at Aatrox and, like, descending down. And then that's all we get. Then it fades out, and we fade into the pilot scene, which is what we got at the E3 sort of announcement, which we'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, that's the intro, that's the prologue to Halo Infinite. Like, it's great, but it also, like we've kind of said, it just kind of just starts a little too late.
I would have liked if it had have been, you know what, I'm going to leave that until we actually get to the end of the game and do like a wrap up of a conversation, because there's loads of stuff I'd like to pull in from where this game finishes to where it starts.
We'll see how next week's episode goes when we talk about the second half, but we almost need to have a third episode where we kind of just talk about it all together and a little bit more big picture.
I think that's a good idea, yeah.
We'll see how it goes, and listeners, stay tuned. Intro happens sometime. This is sometime later. We don't know how long. And we see the pilot. He wakes up. There's like an air leak or something. So the pilot gets up. He shuts it off. He knocks over some luggage, and we see like a little hologram of a woman and her daughter talking to dad. Now, I think this could just be me thinking, but like I have a feeling, and we can kind of come back to, we could circle back to this at the end of the episode, but I think that this may not be his family. Did you ever think about that, or did you always just assume that it's his family?
Definitely. Especially because of like how he reacts to it, and then there's a sentence or two a little bit later on in the game, and then it's kind of where it ends. So like I think it is his family.
Okay. We'll circle back to it after our Pelican Down mission, but I just wanted to mention it here that I have an alternative theory. So anyway, he watches that and it does a cool little transition to where now he has a beard. It's been even more time since that, kind of how long it's been to for him anyway. But we do know that it has been 6 months, because then he hears another distress signal. There's a Pelican says there's like a friendly signal that it detects. And so the pilot's like, oh, this is Echo 216. Like, what's going on? Like, who is there? Who's out there? And he wipes across the screen of the frost. Then he sees Chief with the grapple shot floating and suspending in space. We get that epic, epic shot that we got. That was a great reveal when we first experienced that on the E3 stage. Then somehow the pilot gets Chief on board. Like, is there like a claw or something that kind of like reached out and got him? I don't know.
He just reversed into him, I guess. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, maybe so. Maybe he just floated it. Yeah, that's actually a good way to put it. Maybe he just reversed into him because Chief's there, and then stabilized the gravity or something. It's a very small detail, but I was just like trying to figure out how it happened while I was watching it again. So then the pilot overrides the suit's survival mode, and it wakes up Chief, and he's like, yay, we're going home. Welcome back. We get a little, those blips. Chief sees that there's no AI chip, and he tries to, like, touch it as if there is something. Or no, he was holding it in his hand. That's what it was.
Yeah, there's no AI on the chip. He puts it into his, yeah.
That's what he does. So then it's like, weapon containment device inserted, and it's like, where is this person and, you know, the AI? So that kind of leaves us a little bit questioning what's going on. And then Chief says, status report. The pilot's like, what do you mean? Like, you don't know what's going on. Like, you need to see something. And so they walk over to the ring. The ring is just destroyed. There's debris everywhere floating in space. And this is where the pilot says, we lost. We lost everything. There's nothing left here for us. I don't even seem to know where here is. It's a very somber moment. Then a stasis beam starts rattling up. The pilot gives the chief a weapon, and the chief opens the door and is like, we need to fight. Pilot protests, and then this is where the first mission like begins, because again, it's the whole camera angles and like fluid camera gameplay sort of thing that 343 was really pushing for this game is where it really starts up. And you just get the little HUD display that warship Brigong, I don't know how to say this word.
But his all like his progression through space was so cool.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know, when he was just like moving his way through, and it like how he kind of like gets a coil. He has one bullet. He uses the blast through a wall, and then like he just spins into like grabbing another clip that's floating in space. I'm like, all right. And then you know, when he crashes into like a warthog that's floating in space or some shit, and like you see him like slowly taking a gun from a marine. that's in space, that's obviously like dead in space, and he's like real slow and hesitant in how he does it. And I was like, oh man, there's so much weight to this. And then like he's passing through other Marines, he's like slowly pushing past them.
Yeah, he's being like very like respectful and honoring the fallen soldiers, but he doesn't miss enough of a beat to kind of continue on his own mission. So yeah, that was a great subtle moments that kind of pushed him through there. But yeah, and eventually he arrives at the hangar, and then we're in the hangar. And this mission is a pretty standard Halo mission, I would say. You just kind of navigate the corridors of Warship Gabrakken.
Yeah, it's a Halo mission on a spaceship.
Yeah, Halo mission on a spaceship. And the first Halo mission, you know, like just like Pillar of Autumn or Cairo Station.
And guess what we're going to do, Arn?
Blow it up. So we fight our way. During the mission, we get some holograms of Atriox. We get holograms of Escherum. We kind of learn who those characters are.
There's like one of the speeches is like a reveal that Atriox is dead, that nobody believes for a second, but Atriox is dead, right?
And I was surprised to hear that, and I was like, oh, okay, well, they just think he's probably just missing. he can't be dead. Like they're really not gonna kill this guy.
He's just missing. He's not dead.
They can't just kill this guy off after they've built him up so much. So yeah, so that was one of the moments there. Then as we continue going through the ship, we eventually get to like this control room, and you fight your way. You shut off the stasis beam, but it doesn't really shut off. So then Chief's like, we're just going to blow it all up and blow up the whole ship.
I love how that happens, where like he gets to the controls and he's like, it needs to be hacked. And your man's like, you can do that, right? And Chief goes, no, and punches it. And he's like, it's okay. So now we have to blow up the ship. New plan.
Yeah, new plan. Blow, scuttle the ship. Then we get a really cool speech from Escherum at this point. And one of the things he says is like how humanity calls Chief savior, how the Covenant calls Chief demon, but the Banish call Chief prey. And I think that was a pretty cool line, a little chilling. And even like playing through the campaign, like I've heard grunts and like brutes yell, oh, there's the prey or something like that. And like I was like, oh wow, that's like really cool. So where they're not really calling him demon anymore, they're calling him prey, because they see themselves as, you know, like a predator hunting the Chief. So that was a really cool moment. Really like that dialogue. Then we have some cool platforming bits. That's kind of like a foot version of the Warthog run, I guess.
Yeah, ships blowing up around you as you're kind of running through it.
So that was really cool, just to play with the grapple shot, because like not only are you like jumping around and like running through things, I was zipping around and just kind of Spider-Manning my way all the way down these like mobile bases, I think they were. Mobilization stuff. So then we finally escape, get back to the Pelican, and we get this nice view of Zeta Halo, and then we grapple our way to safety, and then the title fades in Halo Infinite, and that's our first mission. So I thought it was a pretty standard Halo mission, to be honest. That I, you know, you kind of do the typical things: you blow up the stuff, you shoot the bad guys, and yeah, it felt good. I feel like as far as like the first mission goes, from like a gameplay point of view, I felt like it was strong in that regard. It did what it needed to do. Had some good set pieces. Story positioning aside, like it's a solid, good mission.
Yeah, they introduce you to this new Halo game with an old Halo game mission. I'm like, here is a corridor shooter. There's weapons everywhere. They introduce you to the ammo crates, to like how that mechanic works. So many different weapons in the first mission, which I think is pretty cool. Like there's a lot of things you can play around with, and the grapple comes into play a lot. And some of it, like, I like how they're setting up, like, it's kind of, you don't see too much of it, but like it does happen where like you can see that like the Banished have like air superiority here, clearly, because we have no ships in space. But like this is their, one of their support vessels that drops bases onto the ground. Like this is very much like how they would work in like Halo Wars. Do you know what I mean? Where you see your base dropping in from space. Like this is where it comes from, these types of ships. And that's cool. You see throughout the game where like essentially like drop pods dropping down with Banished in them. they're coming from these ships. So I thought it was cool that they introduced you to see this, that this is their base building, kind of like one of their many ships. It's pretty cool. And that they're scavenging and salvaging everything from UNSC. They're just pulling everything out of space and looking for things. And it's that, and that's kind of interesting and important as well, because as they're scavenging, it kind of explains why there's UNSC weapons and armament all throughout this game everywhere. Like, you go to a weapon rack and it could be UNSC shotgun next to a plasma pistol, next to some plasma grenades. You know what I mean? Like, there's Covenant and UNSC weapons all together, and it doesn't distinguish between them. And I kind of like that.
No, yes, I agree. Like, it's a good way to kind of get you in the mindset of what's kind of to come and explain kind of their just large operation that they're doing. So yeah, very, very great detail to include. All right, so moving on to mission two is Foundation. This is where the chief, or the like little title is like, look for a weapon in the broken section of Halo. This very quickly picks up right after Chief grapples into the Pelican. Chief's looking for the US Infinity, but the ship doesn't know where it is. They look for any sort of survivors, and then we get the whole kind of grim IFF tags, all reading deceased, and all that kind of stuff.
There is some important things to note here, that like, the Infinity isn't here. Like, if it's blown up, the wreckage isn't there either. Is the Infinity had a crew of about 7,000, but there's only 2,000 IFF tags in space. So like, a significant portion of the UNSC kind of staff is not accounted for. So I found that kind of interesting, and that's never really touched upon since then. So like, a number of forces land on the ring, and there's a war that lasts a couple of months as the UNSC is kind of fighting. You never really hear too much. That's like all in audio dialogue throughout the game. We were picking up what was going on when. But like, there's a significant lot of questions there that don't get answered straight. And like, I was expecting them to be answered from that scene, because I know we had seen a brief clip of that, of Chief looking, and then like, all the tags going deceased. And that had been revealed before the game launched, and we're like, oh man, what's that all about? And I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't go into it.
Yeah, that's, well, we don't want to say too much. There are some audio logs that do kind of give a little bit of insight of what happened 6 months ago before, you know, while the Banished invaded the Infinity. And so we'll kind of touch upon that and the other stories on another episode, but there are some tidbits in there. But in terms of what's in the mission, yeah, we're just kind of left with, you know, where's the Infinity? It's just simply missing. It's not anywhere near the kind of, like, I guess, range that this Pelican can search. Yes, definitely curious where that is. Then we get a sort of transition, and we see the villain's sort of point of view. We see Escherim talking to some of his brute and other Banished leaders. So we see Tremonius. They talk about how Chief's still alive. They talk about a mysterious Her character. We are introduced to Jaga, who's the Jaga Rodomni, who's the sort of blade assassin, Spartan Slayer.
Did you think your game had glitched? Because I thought my game had glitched when Tremonius started like breaking up and like smashing into like his face, just smashed into the screen. I'm like, what the hell is happening? I couldn't tell what was going on.
Oh, because you couldn't see Jaga?
There wasn't even a hint of the stealth there. It was just Tremonius flopping around the place. I'm like, what the hell is going on? I thought something was, like, there was an actual asset in the game missing. But it was, he was stealthed. I thought that was cool. That was a cool intro.
I didn't think that. I think I just took it as face value, and then it eventually transitioned into, you know, Jaga's reveal. So that's interesting. It kind of reminds me of, is it Arkham Asylum? Doesn't that game have like a moment where people thought their games were like broken when the Scarecrow did something? You played those games, right?
Yes, I have. Yeah, there are moments like that when they mess with you.
Interesting stuff. So yeah, so then we cut back to Chief. He receives a message, but he can't decode it, and he triangulates the signal and finds out that it's coming from a portion of the ring, and tells the Pelican to just autopilot fly over there. So the Pelican's flying over there, and the chief comes back is like, or sorry, the pilot comes back, and you know, this is where we start getting the pilots bickering and whining that is kind of persistent throughout the game, where he says, you need a weapon. Like, how many weapons do you need? Like, come on, man, we need to get out of here. Like, let's just leave. And Chief's like, no, there's a mission. We have to stop the Banished. And then he's also thinking about, you know, some of the stuff that he knows about that the player doesn't know about at this point, to where, like, he knows there's a weapon over that he needs to go retrieve, and because it's a UNSC asset and all that. So they fly down, he hops out of the Pelican, and we're on this Forerunner structure within the ring. It's kind of partly broken because it's with the shattered part of the ring. We fight our way through it. Some pretty cool environments, very, you know, Forerunner-y, very good introduction to this hybrid Bungie era and 343 era of Forerunner architecture.
I love their Forerunner architecture in this game. I just really like how it's done.
I honestly think it's the best in all the series, the Forerunner architecture in this game. It definitely elevates what the past, you know, original trilogy sort of laid, you know, foundation. And then built up and just made it, you know, that high depth, that clarity, and just also just even more mysterious, like, in a way. So yeah, super, super cool. So then we find the weapon, and the weapon happens to be another AI, not so much unlike Cortana. And we learn that it's been 6 months. Cortana's gone. She has been deleted. And then the weapon's introduction also says that they were there, that the weapon's purpose was to infiltrate the installation, mimic like their security protocol, and capture Cortana. And then Chief needed to bring Cortana back to the Infinity for deletion. Also, before we actually move on, right before Chief finds the weapon and is still walking up to the platform, this is the room, right, where all the I think they're called
Silexes. It is, yes.
So they're all like spinning around, and they all look like kind of humans or Forerunners. Like, so these are supposed to be the kind of DNA modules that houses every being in the galaxy in the event of a Halo event.
Yeah, this is how they reseeded them. Yeah.
This is the conservation method.
Yeah, these were first revealed in the Halo Legends anime. Like, one of the first ones they actually show how these things function and how, like, beings were, like, essentially, like, almost like Han Solo kryptonite, they come out of them. They just walk out and they're a fully formed human being or alien or
whatever race.
Yeah, whatever race. So the ones in this room are all human. You can kind of see their shape. And then there's other ones in the game, but we won't talk about that now.
I think I missed that Halo Legends thing. So this is the first time I was seeing this.
No, I knew what they were straight away. I didn't have a name for them, but like, yeah. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I was pretty blown away, and I was like, this is pretty cool. And I kind of connected all of those dots because I, you know what the lore is. But just to kind of see that visual was just very striking, and I really appreciated that. All right, so then we go down.
This cutscene with the weapon is really significant and, like, says a whole lot and confirms a whole lot of theories all in one of what we thought was going to happen. It kind of confirms what we knew the Shadow of Reach story was, what Halsey's plan was, what was there. And that, and like, spoilers for Shadow of Reach, it's probably copies of Halsey's cloned brain that she used to make another Cortana. She made the weapon. It's significant that she doesn't have a name, that she's just called the weapon. There's more revealed later on. But, like, this is pretty huge, that her job was to imitate Cortana. So it, like, specifically looked and talked like Cortana, so that obviously that was there to fool the other created, is what I'm guessing. And that she would then, her sole function was to lock down Cortana, and because that's Cortana's sole function was all infiltration, that's what she was created for. So, like, that's really significant, and that was the mission. I really wish they would have explained all this to the player better, but it is cool, like, the idea that that's the plan. This is how we're going to deal with Cortana, with the created, is make another Cortana. It's cool. I like that. And I will say, like, her introduction as a character, how different she is from Cortana, I love. I love the weapon as a character, and I love her more and more the more I played the game. So I thought her introduction was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, I liked her introduction. I kind of echo a lot of what you said there. Really kind of sets the stage. It tells a lot that you want to learn more about, which we'll kind of just get into a little bit later. But yeah, it kind of wraps it up a little nicely for us to then just kind of carry on and get some information later on.
And Chief is all business.
Yeah, all business. We learn that her programming failed and she was actually supposed to be auto-deleted after Cortana was captured. And she's never heard of the Banished. So it seems that all of her activities happened prior to the Banished's arrival, which is interesting. Chief asked if we needed, if in order to activate the ring, the Banished needs to repair the ring before they can activate it. They also need the activation index, which Cortana had, at least a part of it. And kind of that's just some of the other story that the weapon tells Chief there. But Chief grabs the weapon. They continue navigating this foreigner structure. We get some bits of Cortana, which harpens back to the kind of Halo 3 sort of interactions we had with Cortana throughout the game, and these kind of like headspace visions. And we kind of learned that they're just like random piece of data still floating in space.
Dust and echoes.
Just dust and echoes. They're like data clusters. So we see some of that of Chief, or sorry, we see some of that of Cortana. We see Halsey talking to Chief about Cortana. We kind of see that little data cluster.
All the fields, Orin, they're setting us up for some fields.
They're all here. Then we get to the signal that Chief detected. And so the weapon goes to the signal. She learns that it's part of her, or at least a part that was like deleted or something. And so they take it to save her later because the Banish shouldn't happen or have it. And now they're like, all right, now that we have that, let's go to the surface. So we navigate some more. We get to an elevator and we have our first boss fight.
Cool. Before we start the boss fight, I do want to say that how Chief treats her is so different than what we've seen before. He's so cautious that like when he sees her and she's going to interact with his thing, he pulls her back and is like, is it safe? Like he's just like, he's so cagey with her. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, I really picked up on that at the start, that, like, he's just so different. That, like his experience shows that, like, he's not trusting this AI. He's not sure what she's going to do with the information. Do you know what I mean? What will happen? He's just altogether, like, cagey.
I think I picked that up definitely later when it's a little bit more obvious.
It happens a few times, yeah, when she goes to interact with something, even if it's just, like, to put her in a pillar to open a door, he's really hesitant to do it.
So we get to the elevator, we get our first boss fight, and there's another cute little moment between the two of them, where, like, she's, like, someone's coming down the elevator and it's Banished, and she's like, what if they're friendly? And Chief's just like, they're not. So then we get Tremonius, the war chief. He fights Chief, and this is kind of the first, I'd say, first boss fight in Infinite, and I think the kind of the first hard spot, I guess, in the campaign that kind of gave some people difficulty, kind of learning a little bit about what a Halo boss fight or a Halo Infinite boss fight is, since we've had boss fights in past games. But it's not a walk in the park. You got to use some strategy there.
Yep, caught me off guard for sure. I died a lot.
But it was still good and very rewarding once you finally beat him. And you get to take his Ravager. Or no, he had a Hydra.
He's armed with a Hydra.
He has a Hydra and a Bulldog. So Hydra for when you're far away from him, and then a Bulldog when you're close to him. So the boss weapons are very interesting and very deliberate with this kind of new smart AI system in the game. So that's pretty good. So then after you, are anything else you wanted to say about this mission before we move on?
There are some other Siluxes that you can see. So one of the rooms, they introduce you to the mechanic of the power seed here of like, I don't really know why they do this. I felt like maybe some of the stuff is maybe more significant from stuff that got cut in the game, but it's essentially like a battery you have to go and get. And you put it into a console so that you can push another button to make the console work. It's just busy work, and there's a few of them in the game. But like you go into a room to get one of these power seeds, and like the whole room is a big, huge room full of different Siluxes. And you can look and see that there's grunts, and there's Sangheili and humans all intermingled here. And I think there's something, there might be a Forerunner-y one, I'm not sure. There's a weird one. There's another room directly opposite this. And if you go in, you don't have to go into it, but if you go into it, it is so fascinating. It is a huge room, but one big massive Silex with a really funky picture on it. And it's all shielded. It's not like the other ones. It's totally locked down. it looks like they don't want whatever is in there to come out. And I was like, what is this? And it never comes up in the game.
I completely missed this.
Dude, it's totally optional. I'm telling you now, is this a precursor? It looked like a flood infection form, but blown up massive. Like, it had all these tentacles. It was so, do you know the way it shows you the human figure and you can kind of see, oh yeah, that's human, or like, it's just crazy looking. And I was like, what is this? And that's it. It's never anywhere else in the game, never talked about, but I was like, oh man, that's something. Do you know what I mean? That's cool. That's one of those little Easter eggs that I kind of picked up on in the game.
Holy cow.
I took a screenshot of it. I took loads of screenshots of random shit, but like, I took a screenshot of it to like talk later. And I've seen like the Halopedia guys pick this up. I saw Chris tweeting about it, of like just asking people, what the hell is this? What do people think this is? I think it's precursor. But anyway, that's me. But like, this is cool. It's cool, cool, cool.
Dude, oh man, that's giving me chills.
Yeah, look it up, Orin. Just look it up, what it looks like.
You know what? I'm watching it on YouTube right now, and like, this is nuts. Oh my gosh, that's so freaking cool. All right, sorry. Wow. Okay. All right, let's move on. Wow, that's awesome. Thank you for that. Like I said, both of my playthroughs, I missed that, and I even ventured to be a little bit more like slow on my legendary playthrough, where I wanted to like kind of see if I noticed anything that I missed. So clearly I'm still going too fast for this game. But all right, cool. So we'll learn more about these Silexes. We're actually not done talking about them just yet. But after we get to the top of the elevator, we get our next mission, which is Outpost Tremonius. We start and we get an armor core, and we're shown what an armor core is and how we level up our armor and stuff like that. And then we take a turn and we see another Silex, except this one is opened. And again, this figure looks different. It's a funky shape. Not really seen it before. It's not a Sangheili. It's not a human. What could it be? And so this instantly, I kind of knew what this was based off of the
reveals and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, the reveals and stuff. But it was a nice little nod to like, okay, this is where the person, you know, that character, that being came from. Then Escherim, we get another hologram of him. He says Tremonius was not our best banish, so, you know, discard him. And he kind of just formally introduces himself as he's the current war chief of the banished. And then the gates open, or the doors open, and we get to see Zeta Halo for the first time. It was a pretty wondrous moment, just kind of like standing there.
It's such a beautiful game.
And like, eventually, you know, we get to go pretty much what we're looking at, because we're looking, I guess, south, if you want to give it a direction. We're kind of in the top part of the map, and we travel down south. So yeah, very cool. Then this is a very short mission where all you have to do is basically just establish a landing zone for the pilot, and you create your own outpost. And so once you seize that, you take control of it. The pilot comes down, you introduce the pilot to the weapon. The pilot freaks out thinking it's Cortana, and Chief's like, no, relax, it's the weapon. And Cortana is no longer a threat, and the weapon will help us stop the banished. Then we get kind of like a pseudo, like, half mission called Recovery. I don't really know why they do this in the game, but it's basically like, it's kind of a mini tutorial to kind of introduce you to the open world.
Capturing fobs and stuff, yeah.
Dude, this is what you have to do. These are high-value targets, and oh, there's some Marines over there. You should go save some Marines.
It's just a brief tutorial to their open world.
It's not in your face too much. It is a little bit, or I guess it's a little like, yeah, this is what you have to do. Do.
A little bit handheldy, but like, they have to introduce it to you somehow, because this is like a huge mechanic.
Right, exactly. So they did it quickly, and it was a little like in your face, but it was just enough so you can get it, and then it just quickly moves on. So, and then they say we get, well, they hear like a distress. Yeah, so the weapon receives a UNSC distress signal, and they realize that it's coming from this tower. So then we move on to mission four, the tower. Mission three was Outpost Tremonius. So mission four, the tower.
I will say, this is where I lost myself. So like, I spent hours in between mission three and four. Once they introduced the fobs, the mechanics, and like, no, you have this weird signal of the tower. You take over the first fob and they explain how it does it. And my brain just clicked and went, I love this. And I immediately went like, the game is broken into what I'm going to call islands. They're like floating space islands kind of thing. So like, the first island has the tower and like a significant smaller kind of portion of the game, open world, that's kind of like semi-open world, let's say, of this. I went and did everything here before I touched the tower. I spent so much time exploring, looking, just dicking around. Like, there is so much time I lost. Like, I think everybody had finished this game and I was still in and around the tower because I was just looking for stuff. So this is where this game really opened up for me too.
Yeah, I did a little bit of that, like I said, on my second playthrough. Yeah, it's great. It's a decent sized island, as you say, to kind of get you introduced to this concept, because as you play more, the islands get bigger and there's more activities for you to do. But there's just enough to give you that taste to kind of understand your rebuilding effort. Then it goes, and it just kind of goes from there. And then you can go directly to the tower. If you save some marines, you can go with a hog full of marines, which is what I ended up doing. I saved some marines, got a bunch, and just strolled up to the tower's doorstep and
get that little Chivo, Oren.
Yep, I got the Achievo.
This was cool. The tower setup was so cool. Of like the whole structure, its layout, fighting in and around it. There's loads of weapons and kind of marines that you can rescue along the way that help you. And there's just like just stuff scattered. It introduces you, like, if you take time to explore, you can see there's multiple ways to get in. And there's like, you can shut down generators and open up doors and get in through like the bottom area. Like, you can attack this first area like in different ways. It's really cool. And that's like a main mission that lets you do this. So I thought that was kind of significant.
Yeah, there's like three different entrances. And then once you're even inside, you can then go so many different ways. But yeah, but my two playthroughs were not completely different, but they were different enough to where like it was its own separate like experience to like just to activate the grav lift to get to the top of the tower. But once you do that, once you ascend the lift, you see a Spartan suit just kind of just lying there. And this is where you get your first armor ability, I guess, or your new equipment is through these Spartans that you find throughout the campaign. And so this one's the threat sensor. You get it from Spartan Hudson Griffin.
Okay, you would have had the shield one before this. That's just what I'm going to say now. I don't know where you got it. Yeah. In Foundation, I think you come across a dead Spartan and you pick up the shield. Because the threat sensor is the third one on the list. So you'd have the shield before this.
Maybe you get it with the armor core.
You definitely pull it off a dead Spartan. The first upgrade to shield.
I missed that in my notes, so apologies. So yeah, okay, so this is the second time you get it. The first time you just get the shielding upgrade that just gives you bonus shield resistance. And then this one gives you your actual second ability that you can swap between the threat sensor and the grapple shot. But unlike the first Spartan you find, this Spartan, they believe is possibly still alive, because it's just the suit pieces, the armor pieces. It's not, you know, the body's not in there. So then you start ascending this tower on the inside. It's very dark, very grim. I like didn't even know you had a flashlight until like halfway through my first playthrough. So like playing this mission again, I enabled the flashlight and that definitely helped. And then I even switched to the threat sensor and like gave that a try, and it was pretty cool.
It's obviously on purpose to get you to use the threat sensor. Do you know what I mean? You can't see, use the threat sensor. That's
definitely designed that way. And I just wish there was a little bit more of that. Like it was pretty basic, I would say. And then even like later on in the campaign, like I feel like there's only a few other moments that I think are a little bit more designed. Maybe I just haven't discovered more yet, but I hope to find, if I haven't found them yet, just more opportunities to in environments to use the threat sensor like that, because I feel like it definitely shines a little bit more.
The game doesn't really do that again. Like, it doesn't really like incentivize you. It's all on you then to kind of go with it. And I will say, like, I surprised myself in how much I use the threat sensor in this game. I didn't think I would, but I used it a hell of a lot. And when it's upgraded and you can shoot two, you can shoot multiples, and then the final one, it shows you, it gives all the enemies health bars. That's really interesting to see, like, all the enemies with health bars, to see what your weapons are doing and stuff. It's pretty cool. So I definitely, and then, like, I struggled in this game to say, like, I just thought, like, the active camo was so good. I just didn't see these elites at all. So it's huge for that. And that's part of what we're getting to in a minute. But I will say, Oren, there is an FOB that I came across once. This is probably a Halo Zeta moment. But it was really cool, right? It was a fob, and I was coming up to like, okay, I'll capture this fob. I was miles away from it. I was kind of zoomed in. Okay, I couldn't see any enemies. Got closer. There's no enemies. This fob is empty. All the other fobs in the game I've seen have like enemies all over it. And the weapon is like, this fob seems a bit quiet. I'm like, this fob is really quiet. This is a fucking, this is a trap. So I backed up a good bit onto a cliff and fired off a threat sensor. And it pinged up two stealthed elites underneath it that are just sitting there waiting for you to come. And I was like, this is so cool. This is such a cool moment. So like, I obviously went in and fought the thing. But what I will also, that's a cool threat sensor moment. What I will also say is, if you have a threat sensor and you have Marines with you, and the threat sensor picks up something, the Marines immediately focus on it.
Oh.
Elites will often go stealth when they lose damage and lose their shield. And this happened to me in the middle of a fight. I saw him, it was a gold elite, so he was kind of a big dude, and he went invis, and all my Marines were like, oh, he's gone or whatever. I shot off a threat sensor, it pinged him up. All my Marines turned and fired on him and killed him. And I was like, that is excellent.
That's awesome.
That they pick up on that. And like, so those kind of things are kind of on you to create, if you get me. But like, it has more uses than I would have thought possible, to be honest.
I will definitely be using that more often, because I have numerous times I would be fighting with my Marine buddies, and I would go to reach on the D-pad as if it was Halo 5 to like mark an enemy.
I wish that was a thing, by the way. I really wish it was.
Like, or even like in Halo Infinite for like the multiplayer, like you can mark and ping different points of the map if there's like enemies out for your teammates and stuff. And so that's kind of just, that's become a pseudo natural reflex that I've been having when I'm, you know, in these large firefights. But I'm like, oh man, it'd be great if you focused on this one guy, so then we can kill him and like, you know, for whatever positioning we need or something like that.
When I say you focus, I don't mean like it doesn't actively tell them to do it, if you know what I mean. They just will do it.
But that still just might help. Like, if I take the moment to equip it, shoot it over to my left, and then I'm like, okay, I did it there. And then like, even if I start firing to someone on my right, like if like maybe that brute like went around a corner or something, and I can't like see him, like maybe just notifying him and peeing him will be enough of a motivation for the Marines to kind of like flank or something to even try to deal with them. So I don't know, the potential's there. I'll just have to try it out. That's really cool. Thank you for that. So like we alluded to, so when you get to the top of this tower, you learn that Spartan Griffin is still alive. He's in like some sort of torture, almost like a Han Solo type of carbonite device.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that's funny.
And you meet Checklock, a cloaked elite who, I guess it's his tower that he runs, and he does like interrogations and torture, and that's just who he is. He's a torturer. So that's enough motivation for us to try to kill him. And yeah, this boss fight's completely different to the one that we did with the brute Tremonius, because this guy's cloaked. We use the threat center. There's also an arena just like Tremonius has.
He wrecked me the first time.
Much more challenging, even though the other boss was also challenging with his jetpack. But I think the strategy that I was able to find was, you know, use the threat sensor. If you're able to actually hit him with a threat sensor, it that helps a lot because it moves around with him. But shock grenades and the shock fusion coil, or the shock coils, are kind of your best friends in this fight, because he stays in place and he's literally lit up for you to, you know, lay some damage into him. Then you rescue Spartan Griffin, and in his dying breaths he says, I heard them talk about something called the Conservatory. It's north of here. There's a dig site. You know, there's all these other Spartans that have died, and we need to, and Chief just, like, there's a really good moment here of, like, Chief just holding him.
This is brilliant.
And, like, just watching him die.
Did your controller vibrate with his heartbeat? Because mine did.
Ooh, man, I don't know.
Oren, I'm using my Elite controller, and it vibrated with his heartbeat and got slower and slower through the conversation. And I was like, oh my god. And then, like, in the middle of, like, I think the weapon, or, like, the Echo 216 is calling for you, and Chief is just looking at this dude, and you can see the dude's reflection in Master Chief's helmet, and my controller's vibrating and then stops. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I felt, I didn't know this dude at all And I felt this moment. I was like, this is a, and Chief felt this moment. He really does feel when he loses these Spartans. And like, when you're finding the threats, when you're finding the equipment, like you, off this dead Spartan, and like, the weapon is describing how this person died, and Chief is just like, hand on the shoulder as he picks up like, their equipment and stuff. I'm like, this is like, this feels here, Oren. Oh my god.
That's awesome. Man, that's such a great detail. That I guess I just didn't pick up on it. Or maybe my vibrating settings are low or something. I don't know. Gosh, I guess I have to start a whole nother playthrough for moments like this.
Yeah, got that one on. Pay attention, dude.
Well, after the unfortunate passing of Spartan Griffin, we leave the tower and a new area of the map opens up. There's like a bridge that extends. And we're able to start going towards what's called the excavation site, which then starts our next mission. And this area is about twice the size, I'd say, of the first area we were just in. And just like you were saying, like in my second playthrough, I was just hopping around, going from collectible to collectible, audio log to audio log.
Oh, it took me so long to get to the excavation
site. You know, like just kind of figuring out what I wanted to do.
When I was getting to the excavation site, there are two marine squads all around this area, just sitting there with weapons and warhogs and stuff. And one of those, it's on like the top right hand corner as you look at the excavation site, is where I first found a special weapon in the map. So they had the Breacher Bior, which I kept for a significant portion of this game because I loved it. So like, I was so happy that you can get the kind of, now it comes into the Valor that you unlock over time as well. You can get these special versions of standard weapons and they're awesome. And the Breacher AR is just sitting up there on a cliff and it's just dope. I kind of love that this game does that.
Now, if you pick it up in the open world, does it respawn at your fob or no? Only when you get enough valor.
Yeah, only when you get the Valor unlock. Finding it in the open world is a one-off. Now, you can hold it as long as you can find ammo for it.
Which, luckily, those ammo crates are kind of around in places.
The power weapon ones are pretty rare, I will say. There's plenty of the kinetic ones and stuff like that around.
Awesome. That's great. All right, moving along. Excavation site. This is another straightforward mission. We get to the excavation site. It's very quiet. Too quiet, you might say. There seems to be this giant hole in the ring. And the weapon's like, oh, the Forerunner alloy is almost indestructible. Like what happened here? And then all of a sudden, this drill just turns on, this like laser drill. And there's this huge ambush. And the weapon's like, we need to shut down that drill. Chief's like, all right, let's do it. So you have to fight your way around the drill to blow up things to then work your way up to shut it down.
Yeah, you go inside it first and then you push the button and she can't turn it off. But then she's like, we can overload it. And then you have to leave it then and then push the button to raise these power couplings to kill them. And like, you're under attack the whole time.
And then when you return back to the machine, you get ambushed again by another boss. This is Bassus. And he's a gravity hammer brute.
I hated him. Oh my god.
This guy, on my heroic playthrough, I did the first two bosses with not like ease, but not a whole lot of like huge difficulty. But this guy took me a while on heroic.
It's such cramped quarters, man. I just.
Difficult, yeah. Yeah, like. But what this allowed me to do, though, it allowed me to think about how to grapple instead of just straight up grappling, because it was like if I grappled like a corner and I like looked a certain way, then I would be able to like launch myself around the corner into the next room. And then like if I'm in a corridor, like because he's like lunging at you, I could, instead of just like sidestepping to the left or the right, if I grapple and a little bit more up and like to the left or to the right, then I can swing like over him almost. And so like that's what I kind of treated this fight as. I didn't really use the threat sensor at all, but it kind of, I don't know, to me it seemed like more of a maneuverability one, and you just kind of pick him off here and there. And then I actually prepared for this fight on legendary by taking full rockets up there the first time and then just dropping them and then activate, like, you know, did activating the things that blow up, then went back down, then got another set of rockets. So then I effectively had like two full runs of rockets, and then I literally just like unloaded all the rockets on them for my legendary run. But it's still challenging because, like, you know, they take a while to shoot and reload, and so you're still,
and he's all up in your grill.
Yeah, but at least you're able to really pump some damage into them. And then the fusion coils and all that kind of stuff, the blast coils, they help out too. But once you beat Bassus and you shut down the drill for real, then you are able to enter the conservatory for the next mission, which is mission 6. Right when you enter the conservatory, you meet your next Spartan, Verinda Dovovich?
Malkovich?
Malkovich, John Spartan John Malkovich.
It's a woman. It's a female.
It's a female Russian Spartan, and I don't think I caught her name in my playthrough, and I just kind of wrote this down very quickly. But this is where you get the drop wall, which I think I have yet to use in the campaign.
The drop wall is probably not. It's strangely the one I use the least between that and the thruster. It is cool when you level it up fully, but like it's not, because of, like, I've complained already about the controls for, like, activating these abilities and getting to them. When I needed it, I never could get it, and I just died. So, like, typically I would, in my brain, like, I would drop it when I needed a shield and a break, and I could rarely ever get it. But when it's fully leveled up, you drop it and everything you shoot through it gets the electric weapon ammo type. So, like, you can shoot rockets that are electrified. You can shoot Ravager shots through it that are electrified.
What? That's the highest?
Yeah, that's the last one. Is it electrifies all of your projectiles going through it, and, like, electric wipes through shields. So, like, you can... Having a Ravager shots that are electrified is insane. Like, it's just so good. But other than that, I'd say it's probably the last thing you'll level up, because it's the least useful, in my opinion. Other people might have their own opinions of in the game, but yeah, the drop wall ain't all that great, I don't think.
That's awesome, man. Gosh, there's so much to this game that I still need to experience. All right, so you get your drop wall, and then you have to investigate the conservatory. You fight your way through it. Then you meet the monitor of the installation, Despondent Pyre, who gets then attacked by this new alien race, this new enemy that we've never seen before. And the monitor is like, where do we go? Like, what do we do now? And Chief's like, we go down, like, we go find, yeah, the weapon. So they descend farther down. We get another echo of Cortana and Despondent Pyre talking about containment, about there's something worse than the flood down here. And we can't free those that have been contained, referring to, you know, whatever was released from the earlier mission that we saw.
And refers to one at the other thing that was, as the exile has returned. Or like the ultimate, to something exile, there's a name behind it of like, this is like the ultimate exile or something like that. So I'm like, the Forerunners exiled this person and who should not have been released. And she's like panicking over it. I think that's, yeah, it's cool. It's an interesting setup.
Then we're in a giant room, and we learn that these new enemies are going to be called skimmers, and they're kind of like hovering enemies that shoot the shock rifles.
Fun story, Oren. They will pick up anything, and I've seen them with rocket launchers. I've been killed with these dudes because I thought they had shock rifles.
I just kill them too quickly for them to pick up anything else?
Could be, or they could have had it and you just killed them and not realized that they were dropping it. But, like, I've seen them with other weapons, yeah.
I've pretty much only seen them with shock weapons.
To be honest, in the grand scheme of the game, like, they're not big. They don't have a big presence. They're a weird role. They kind of feel like they got a drone and a grunt and smashed them together. They don't have any dialogue. They feel a little bit underused, I think. I wonder if there's something more to them. Because, like, how they hover is kind of similar to something else that we haven't talked about yet. So I'll wait till we get there. They're kind of nothing. To be honest, they die really quick. You do a headshot. They're like grunts, to be honest with you. Like, you can shoot them and take them down, almost nothing.
Yeah, they're kind of more akin to, like, a skirmisher, like, that just kind of float. Like, they're a little bit more of the kind of, like, mid difficulty enemies in terms of like health, but they're pretty easy to kind of headshot, and they're not overly evasive that I've found anyway.
They crash into each other a lot, which I thought was pretty fun. So like, I've definitely like gone for a headshot, missed, shot their backpack, and they've just spun out of control and crashed into each other and blown up. I was like, that was cool.
Let's see. So after you fight this room, do you go to retrieve the weapon from the kind of pedestal? Do you see that Despondent Pyre was like completely ripped over, like ripped open?
Yeah, this is a cool sequence, man.
Yeah. And that Cortana was here 6 months ago. Yeah, like they're like completely disassembled, which like, I wonder if you're able to like retrieve any information, if like that's what they were doing, or if were they just disabling and kind of like deconstructing Despondent Pyre just for the sake of...
No, I got the impression they were extracting something from her based on the cutscene that happens a little bit after this.
Oh, yes, I think you're right.
But I always felt, I was like, I thought you could just reassemble her. I wonder if that's a thing that could happen later. We'll probably get to this in another episode where we talk about DLC potential and stuff and returning, but like, I like the idea of maybe coming back to these locations and having to do different things and progress in the story. Like, it would be cool to come back here and like, maybe you can reassemble this monitor or something. And now that we know, because of based on other books about like what monitors are and can be, do you know what I mean? That there's elements there of like, it could be interesting to see what we could do next with this. But anyway, we won't go too far down the rabbit hole there.
We're almost at the end here where we continue to fight through. We find another Spartan on this level, Theodore Sorel, who is a weapons specialist. And that's where you get the thruster module. So then you can use your thrusts, which is basically what you had in Halo 5 and a little bit in Halo 4. Then you kill some more brutes, and then there you're looking for an elevator to the surface, and you're like, why do we come all the way down here when we had to leave, go all the way back up? And then that's when we get into another room and we meet our new character, the Harbinger. And this is another alien looking race. We've never seen this type of person before. Probably are similar in terms of them, of kind of her and the skimmers, in terms of whatever their race are.
Yeah, all the skimmers have helmets on, so you can't really see them. But how she's hovering, those like little boosters on her back are the same as the skimmers. So that's where I was relating what she was to what they are.
I think you could shoot off their helmets a little bit, kind of like the brutes. And I think I looked at one of their... Yeah, and I think I've seen their like helmet a little bit more, or like their head in a little bit more like closed up and detailed. So
I will say she looks awesome. I love her design and everything about her is just so good. Her voice acting, like everything about this character, the harbinger of truth, she kind of calls herself. She's got some choice dialogue. She was definitely being set up here, I think, as kind of like the way the Didact has kind of behaved. And like, she's very anti-Forerunner, talks about that she's not your enemy.
The Forerunners are a lie, and that she's the harbinger of truth. So there's proclamations here. But she does say that Despondent Pyre has something that she requires, which is probably why she disassembled Despondent Pyre and extracted information.
Yeah, that thing she presents as like, it's just a random shape, I guess. But then she slams that down and then it begins the reformation, which is where all these big spires come out of the ground and the cutscene kind of takes place. But
yeah, and Chief basically gets thrown out of the building, and then now we're back outside.
That was really cool. It was him like smashing through the tree and into the rocks and just breaking shit up everywhere. And he gets up immediately and is ready. I thought it was cool.
And then we get this great like hero shot of him looking up towards the sun, and his visor is all shiny and look great. But yeah, that's the Harbinger that we meet. And the Reformation... It took me a little while to figure out what the Reformation was, and I was trying to think of if I like knew what it was beforehand. But basically, the Reformation is just the process of reforming, or the root word there, reforming the ring.
Doesn't the Didact say something, like the actual Didact at the end of Halo 4's? It's in his speech, like the reclamation can begin or whatever.
And that's where I feel like I might have heard it before, but I don't know. If he says Reformation as well, unless he's referring to something else, but reclamation, I think he was talking, or maybe that's what it was, the reclamation, because he was going on how the humans are not the reclaimers, and shouldn't assume the mantle of responsibility. So maybe he was referring to the reclamation. But yeah, it took me a little while to figure out what the reformation actually meant until we get like into the other spire mission. But anyway, then we are looking at this giant spire and we're like, huh, let's go to the spire. And this was another moment where it's like, yeah, you could just straight shot go to the spire, or you could spend the next 2 hours exploring this little like valley that you're in of all the nooks and crannies and fobs and things. And you could even get around a lot of these brutes and just enter from one of the backsides, which is, you know, pretty interesting.
We are talking about the spire, aren't we? Yeah. So like, you're introduced to the first hunters of the game here.
Yeah.
So I was busy running around this whole map at this stage, and eventually I came back to the spire and I had a sniper, and I just like, I sniped these hunters from miles away, and I was like, and then like I popped achievements for like killing the hunters, and I was like, that was cool. Like, do you know what I mean? That you could do that. It wasn't just a set moment. So many good moments in this game.
Yeah, well, I had a weird moment where I was like, oh, there's an FOB over here. I'm going to go capture it, get some marine buddies, and we're going to go take down this hunter together. And so I do that, but then they can't like climb like Chief does, so I have to like enter it through the front entrance. And so I was driving the Razorback.
The best vehicle in the game. Continue.
As I got around, all of a sudden, like a brute with a skewer would start shooting at me, and then it just like blew me up. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So now I have to kill all of these guys just to go through the front entrance to get my marine buddies to help me fight these hunters. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. So when I respawned, I just got out of the Razorback, grappled over the ledge, and then now it's just me versus the two hunters. And then I got like the, you know, the shotgun and the heat wave, and was able to, you know, eventually beat them. But I was just like, huh, darn, that's a little disappointing. I didn't want to do all that fighting, but like, I wanted to fight some hunters with some marine guys.
Fun story. I had, and the original run I did of this, and like, I sniped the hunters, and like, had seen that area was like full of weapons and full of like big open area. And I was like, oh, this is going to be like Truth and Reconciliation. There's going to be any reinforcements coming in. I'm going to have to push a button to turn on this lift or whatever and defend the area. So I was like, okay, I'm definitely getting Marines and bringing them in here. That's what I did, Arne. I spent ages, got a whole bunch of Marines, put them in a Razorback, gave them all special weapons, fought my way through, fighting all these brutes, killing all these vehicles. There's tons of brutes here. I think the brute chopper might be here. There's a load of ghosts. Ghosts show up for the first time, I think, here. So I just loaded it, and I fought them down, brought on my Marines, and I was like, brilliant. You get into the entrance, you walk in, you push the button, the mission starts, and you go up a lift. And I was like, god damn it, like, you don't bring the Marines with you, they just sit there, you there. And I was like, oh my god. I was kind of hoping the Marines would jump in with me, but they don't.
Yeah, too bad they didn't follow you up, that would have been great. So, alright, so this mission, it's pretty straightforward. You get up there, and you meet someone called Adjunant Resolution, right? Adjunant. And he's a sub-monitor of the installation, works with the Despondent Pyre. He asks, you know, where is the Despondent Pyre? And Chief and the Weapon are like, should you tell him? Should I tell him? And you're like, Despondent Pyre is dead. Adjunant Resolution's like, oh no. So then he's like, well, you probably want to go to the observation platform. And we're like, yeah, sure, let's go to the observation platform. And so they go there, and then I'm just going to call him AR. AR leaves, and the weapon, like Chief puts the weapon in, and they learn that this structure creates the materials capable of repairing the ring, which is what the Reformation is. And Chief's like, eh, no, we can't have that. We got to shut this down. And just like back on CE with 343, AR returns and is like, what? You can't shut this down. Like, I thought you were my friend. And then we have what was, at least for me, kind of the biggest eye roll of this entire campaign.
The mech suit that the fucking thing gets?
Yeah, the basic, like, the Sentinel chassis comes out.
I was like, this is ridiculous.
I was like, really? Like, this is... Like, I would have been fine if it was just the monitor. Like, just give me, like, a more involved Halo 3 fight, you know? Like, instead of us being against a wall and we just have to Spartan laser. Like, if you just gave me a giant health bar and I just had to avoid a laser, like...
That wouldn't have been cool. That just would have been bullet spongy as all hell. I mean, that wouldn't have been that exciting, I don't think.
You don't think so? I don't know. The whole mech suit thing I thought was just over the top and was just like, that's just kind of lame.
I wasn't big on it either, but even if you just called in, like, there's so many different types of Sentinels that you could have been thrown at you here. Do you know what I mean? They could have just called in a big ass.
Or he could have, like, opened a door and, like, Banish just come out. It could have been, like, firefight where we just had to fight a shit ton of forces, like, in this room. But what was cool is that we got to have a lot of hard light weapons in this room. So we got to really get the heat wave. I think we got the Sentinel for the first time. And really got a chance to play around with those weapons, which was pretty cool. But after we defeat him, which is basically just the mission, they shut down the spire, and Chief has to, or the weapon discovers that there's actually 10 other spires that are now becoming active, and they're all on, like, standby, and they're waiting. The protocol that they that triggered the spires wasn't correct, and so they're not able to start. And that's when the Harbinger then detects the weapon. And I think this is another moment where Chief is like, is it safe? Or, like, is it okay? And this is where I started to pick up on the Chief not really trusting or being hesitant to trust the weapon in terms of, like, how much would she fall into Cortana. Now, is there a little bit of a hint to the red flag sort of Easter egg thing at this moment? Or is that later?
Yeah, it's not here, but, like, there is. Like, the very, very first time when he puts the chip in his head, it's not an AI chip, it's an AI containment device. Do you know what I mean? So, like, at the very beginning, it hints towards you that this chip is a little bit different than, like, what Cortana was on, let's say. And then when he actually meets her for the first time and she goes into this chip and the game makes you put it in with the button prompt, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool that it lets you do that, put the chip in. And when it boots up, you can see it talks about, like, the AI failsafe initialization protocols initiate. Like, this dialogue pops up on the screen. So you're kind of like, I picked up immediately that, like, okay, there is something going on here with this weapon that, like, it's not just a free AI, let's say. There's an element of trust there. So I think it happens after this is where you actually see, like, the red flag thing initialize and you see John get ready to do some shit.
So then the weapon, you know, the Harbinger starts speaking and saying, I'm not sure what she says.
She's kind of like, what are you doing? What is this? She's figuring out what an AI is and that it's in the system.
That's right. She's kind of unfamiliar with what the weapon actually is. And so she's noticing this disturbance and trying to figure out what it is. But then the weapon deactivates the spire, which then severs the connection between, you know, where they are and the Harbinger. But then, like, the ceiling starts closing in.
Everything's just shutting down.
Yeah, everything's just, like, shutting down. Oh, no, actually, it's, like, straight up falling, right? Isn't it, like, because it's, like, suspended. But we see it actually, like, descend into the ground. And so Chief's like, we need an evac right now. And the pilot's like, what? Okay. And kind of quickly flies around. And then probably one of the more cooler events in the cutscenes in the game is when Chief, like, jumps out, is, like, free-falling. The pilot's like, WTF. We get some cool scenic shots, and the pilot opens up the hatch and just kind of nicely catches Chief. And then you see him fly away, and the spire just kind of crumbles in the background. So, but after they stabilize, Chief asks for the locations of all the spires, and there's 42 total locations. But before they can kind of continue isolating which spire is, like, the one we need to go to, they immediately get attacked by some AA guns, and this very quickly transitions to the Pelican Down mission. And this is our E3 demo that we got way back two years ago, and the Pelican crashes, and then we have to. But what's funny though is that the Pelican crashes, but after, you know, kind of jumping a little ahead, but after the mission, he's able to just fly it again.
That's one of my, this mission is like one of my kind of pain points in the campaign of like, okay, there had to have been a shit ton of Aegons all over this ring. And there's a lot of, audio logs of the remaining forces disabling them in the first kind of elements in the war. But we know they're there, right? We can, you can see these Aegons in the distance. There's got to be loads of them. This Pelican's just jumping around this map, doing whatever it wants, total willy-nilly. No problem. And then it eventually gets shot down. So I was like, okay, it makes sense. Like, there had to have been tons of guns, but like, he literally flies straight in front of them. And like, I'm like, you definitely could have done this better. And then it's unambiguous to the amount of damage being done, but you see it getting shot twice head on. And then he's like, I have to emergency land. I'm like, no, you have to crash, buddy, because your Pelican's dead. And he crashes it into the ground. And then there's no mention of repairs. There's no mention of anything. He wants to go find Condors and get out, get the Sith Space Drive and get off the ring. That's fine. We've seen all of this. But like you said, jumping ahead, like, Pelican's fine. There's no mention of, and I really feel like they should have done something of like, yeah, I'll sit here and fix this Pelican while you go and do that. Like, we're in a graveyard. I'll find all the bits I need here. This whole area is really cool, by the way. The whole kind of broken up graveyard remnant, like all everything the Aegon shot down, all crashed around it. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's a great environment, and like I enjoyed, and I to kind of just quickly go through so we can get back to this sort of like graveyard. But like, you go up and you have to activate a lift or get into the AA gun and then eventually just shut it down. And two of the three, Escherim actually appears in a hologram and like intimidates you. That's where we get the set of fire in your heart speech. We get the our stories will outlive us both, and then some more intimidating things. But then once you defeat all three of those, or blow up all three of those AA guns, Escherim then unleashes two brothers, part of the Spartan Killers, as they're called.
But like, I think they literally only say that here, and then never again the whole game do you hear about the Hand of Aatrox.
I feel like they say it a few more times. I think I've heard it a few times. I'd have to pay closer attention, but
I felt like there was a bit of this of, I think it was just around this mission where you learn, because I think the weapon says it to you a few times and she starts unlocking hearing communications. And I think if you're paying attention to the propaganda towers that are in this area, they talk about it a lot as well.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of. But I mean, when you're going to the Spartans, the dead Spartans, and you're getting the armor upgrades, you do, like, there is a bit, you even get to one of these, I think. And there's like, and like Chief says, like, we have a score to settle.
Yeah. And then the last one you meet, the one that has the thruster, he was beaten by brutes. And so you're on the mission to go and hunt down these brutes, essentially. Like, you kill these two other big mega brutes that have scrap cannons. And he's like, was that them? And the weapon's like, no, they're still at large.
Yeah.
So I feel like they should have done more with the hand to set them up to being different than the high value targets. Do you know what I mean? They talk about the high value targets way more than they do the Hand of the Aatrox, which I feel they should have done more time on, in my opinion.
Yeah, so they introduce these dudes, Hyperius and Tavaris, and their brothers. Hyperius has the chopper, is in a chopper, and then when he gets out of the chopper, he has a Ravager and a sniper rifle. And then Tavaris has the scrap cannon that he kind of just jetpacks around and shoots at you. And this fight, fortunately, unfortunately, however you want to look at it, I kind of glitched through it on my first playthrough because I knocked over the chopper, Hyperius, and he glitched into the floor. And then I, like, shot at the ground a few times and, like, willed his health, but then eventually he just despawned. And then I was just like, oh, okay, I guess he's dead. And then I killed the other brother and then just moved on. But on Legendary, when I played it recently, I actually had to physically do the fight, and it kicked my ass so much, like even more so than the Bassus fight. And I actually had to like stop playing, not because I was getting like angry or anything, I was just getting tired of dying, and I was like, all right, I'm just gonna go to bed and I'll pick this up another day. But I found that like killing Hyperius first, is he's the harder of the bosses, and you have to kill both of them in one life, which is kind of like the whole gimmick. But what was cool about this fight, though, is that because it's in this, like, Condor frigate graveyard, that, like, if I was able to find a ghost and was able to, like, almost encircle them a little bit, kind of pick off a few random mobs here and there, but then circle back around and, like, replenish ammo or grab, like, a fusion coil, so then I can kind of get around and still, like, circle them, because if you stay still, you're just going to die. You kind of have to keep moving in this fight. So that was a very challenging fight that you eventually had to get through. But I like the environment, the kind of, like, this graveyard. And, like, even the pilot is just like, there's three condors here. Like, I've never even seen one. And, like, there's three that are just here, obliterated. Like, all of it is just crushed. Like, the pilot has a really great speech at the end of this mission, and then it helps explain, like, how much of a coward he is. And so I have some of it here where it's like, you know, there's three condors here, they're torn apart, their slipspace drives are obliterated, all of it is crushed. When is it enough? And he's like, I'm not you, talking to Chief. I'm not even a pilot, I'm not even a soldier, I'm not a Marine, I'm a fraud. And kind of just goes on how he's scared and he's worthless and really has this low point. And that's when Chief, like, sits down next to him and is like, we all fail and we all make mistakes. And that's what makes us human. And he's eventually getting to that, like, you know, we have to, the subtext there is that it's just a matter of us picking ourselves back up. And Chief, this is where Chief's, like, survivor guilt that I think you mentioned earlier is saying, where, like, you know, he should have protected Cortana.
Yeah, there's a lot of that throughout the campaign at different moments of interactions with him and the weapon.
This is just, like, a huge moment for all these characters. And then, like, the weapon even pops up and it's just like, you know, we gotta do it, guys. Like, we have ourselves. It's a matter of, I think they said, all we have is each other. And, like, Chief says, well, that's enough. That's all we need. And it kind of uplifts everybody. And then the pilot's like, all right, well, what do we do next? Let me guess. Is it going to kill us all? And then that's when they look off to the distance and you see, like, a beam from one of the foreigner structures kind of take flight. But I think this is, like, an important moment for the pilot. And like, online, he's kind of had mixed reactions. And I do admit that he's relatively annoying and whiny in the first half of the campaign. And I feel like this moment that we got should have happened earlier in the story, because, like, it's such a good moment. Like, you finally get to learn his story. And this is why I circle back to, like, the beginning of the episode when I was saying that, like, for some reason, I can see the argument to where, like, this family, this hologram that he has isn't his family, because he, like, stole this pelican and he's just so alone. And, like, literally the only connection he has is this hologram.
I know what you mean. I would have liked, like, I like the idea they explained that he's just a volunteer engineer who just was legging it off to Infinity and stole this pelican to get out of there. I do like that. I like that this is the character you now have to deal with. He's your pilot. That's kind of cool. I like the setup here. I think the weapon does ask him, it might be here, might not be here, do you have someone you care about? And he says, not anymore. So, like, that touched upon the, I thought this whole, I want to get home, is because he had a family to get back to, he was trying to get back to. But I think it's the case of they're gone and all he has is this hologram that he's holding on to, like, just playing the message over and over again. Like, I thought that was pretty deep. And I liked that they did something with his character, that there was a deliberation behind his name, behind what he is. I'd like to go into loads more detail about what I think they should do here and what I wish they had done. But maybe not now, maybe in our later episodes.
Yeah, we'll do that on another episode because we're running pretty long.
Ari, how we doing, Orin? I keep interrupting with stuff, do I?
No, it's fine. I mean, this...
It's only two of us. Imagine number three people there.
Yeah, right? Like, I mean, this is a lot of info. Maybe we should have done three episodes for the story, but it's a lot to talk about. It's a dense campaign. A lot happens. There's more to be said about what actually does happen and what doesn't happen. But those conversations we'll have later on. But to just kind of wrap up this mission, we do get a cutscene with Escherum and the Harbinger. And they kind of are going back and forth that, like, you know, you're losing control. We need to send more people after the Spartan. This is where the Harbinger says something about There's something here helping him that's connected to the installation. And so that's intriguing her. And they talk about the Reformation, just kind of set up that there's more interworkings happening behind the scenes that the chief is yet to discover. That's when Jaga comes in and he says, all right, that's when Eshram says that, you know, I have a job for you. I need something of you. And, you know, you need to bring me the Master Chief alive. And so that's kind of where that cliffhanger leaves us. And that's basically where we'll end it here from that point of view. But I guess, David, are there any sort of other things you wanted to touch on about this episode or about this mission or anything else?
No, I really liked it. Like I said, I loved the area. I thought it was really fun. Taking those AA guns was really cool. Each one is kind of set up well. It's cool. The boss fight kicked my ass on normal too. Took me a couple of goes. But ultimately, yeah, it was cool. I liked it a lot. I did like it. I did something with the pilot. And I don't know. It's cool. It's very, very cool. All the interaction between the weapon and the pilot. They have great dialogue with each other. This is the whole thing of like, everything's trying to kill you. And she's like, it kind of is. Oh, that was sarcasm. Oh, I like him. He's funny. I love all that stuff. I love all the dialogue. It might be in one of these missions I can't really remember where like she's pinging Chief as well as being like, see, you can be funny. Like, you can be optimistic. I can't remember when it happens, but like, just good, great moments. Great dialogue. I love it.
Yeah, the three of them, they have a good dynamic. It just takes them a little bit of time to get there. But yeah, it's an exciting, I mean, like I said, a lot happens. There's a lot of story here. And throughout our Infinite Impressions series, we're going to dive into more of what this game has to offer. Of course, we also have our whole Mission Debrief series that, David, you're a part of, that you guys are going to dive into each mission individually and talk about things. You know, maybe you'll be able to discover what that mystery Silex belongs to and stuff like that. But we'll end it here. Next week, we'll do our part two, where we'll take the remaining missions. I won't say what they are in case the listener here isn't caught up. But this is about the halfway point in the game. There's 15 missions, and this is mission 8. So we will talk the second half of the campaign next. We will talk a little bit about where the story leaves off. I hope to finish the campaign on Legendary so then I can experience the Legendary ending. So we could talk about that.
I will not be talking about that.
No. You're gonna do the same thing?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wanna finish it in the game first. I don't think I'll have that done, depending on when we do that episode. So I don't know. It depends. I might not be on that episode. But I think other people are trying out on Legendary now too. So we should have a full team, I'm sure.
I think some people in our group at least have just watched the Legendary ending on YouTube or something. I wanna earn it, so I'm fighting my way through that fight now. And that's where we'll be for the next episode, and then we'll see where that takes us into the new year. So I guess we'll wrap it up there, guys. This is a monster of an episode, but yeah, it's only half the campaign, guys. This is awesome. So join us next week for Infinite Impressions number 5, Campaign Spoiler Cast Part 2. Thank you all for joining us. You can find every episode of all of our shows and all of our other lore series on our website, halopodcast.com. You can also search for their unique podcast feeds on your favorite podcasting service. If you want to listen to everything all in one feed, just follow Halo Podcast Evolved on your service of choice. And also, don't forget to leave us a review. Another special shout out to all of our patrons and all of our new patrons. Welcome to the community. Thank you guys for your support for this show and making all of our episodes possible. If you are not a member and want to learn more about what we offer our patrons, head over to patreon.com/Halo Podcast Evolved to learn more. And finally, leave us a voicemail about this episode or another episode or anything related to Halo Infinite. If you did something cool in the campaign that, you know, we didn't do in our playthroughs, or you discovered something that we haven't talked about, leave us a voicemail and we'll share it on one of our news episodes. Voicemails.
Like, if you have an Easter egg that we don't know yet, I want to see it.
Yeah, that too. Like I'm fine with like those kind of spoilers and stuff, but like if you find something, like, I know there's like an arcade cabinet, there's like a Craig World Tour thing, like Like, there's some cool things in there. So if you discovered them and you found them and want to share that story, you can drop us a line. Our voicemail Google number is 205-EVOLVED, which is 205-386-5833. And that may even be a text-compatible number as well, I'm being told. So if you don't want to give your voice, but just give us a quick text, you could text that number as well. Again, it's 205-386-5833. And with that, thank you for joining me, David. I have been your host, Oren. And until next time, evolve.
Evolve.